Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What is up, Gypsy Gang? For the 2024 Supercar season, we are once again teaming up with the Red Bull Ampol Racing team to bring you quarterly reviews from key members of the sport's most successful racing outfit. In the first installment, we are joined in the studio by the team's full-time driver lineup of Will Brown and Brock Feeney, fresh off the first two rounds of the Supercars Championship. I'm stoked to be bringing you these through 2024 with two dudes that are studs on and off the racetrack. In this episode of the podcast, we talk about the epic 2024 livery reveal in Will's hometown of Toowoomba. We go over the opening round of the championship at Bathurst, which was a dream start for both the boys and the team, as well as the always glamorous Oz GP in Melbourne. We also talk about why Brock has decided not to race GT cars in 2024, as well as some fun rapid-fire questions at the end. But before we get into this episode, though, we need to bring you a few words from our sponsors. Rev up your engines, folks. This episode is fueled by the high-octane grooming champions at Manscaped. This racing season, don't just speed around the track. Turbocharge your grooming game and cross the finish line in style with the leaders in precision pit stop care. Blow past the competition and trim the starting grid with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0, boosting your confidence to pole position. Gear up with the sleek aerodynamics of Manscaped and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust their victory lap to Manscaped. Race over to manscaped.com and use the code GypsyGang for 20% off plus free shipping. Ever since I've used Manscaped, I can proudly say that I have shaved seconds off my old fella's lap times. Meet your new nether region race bike, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer comes with two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, one for a classic trim and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It's equipped with dual LED spotlights to navigate your patch in peace. Worried you'll make a mess? Fear not, this wonder is waterproof. So even when those racing wets are required, you are still dialed. Its compact case makes it an ideal travel companion, ready for any adventure or last minute plans. Complete your look with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit, plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with code GypsyGang at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code GypsyGang at manscaped.com. Today's show is soaked in support from our friends at Dry Times, the Australian towel company that's revolutionizing the way you dry. Whether you're wrapping up a surf session at Burleigh Beach or stepping out of a steamy shower, Dry Times towels are crafted with uniquely woven fibers designed to wick moisture faster than a kangaroo on the run. They're ultra absorbent, incredibly soft, and come in a variety of vibrant colors and patterns that are as lively as a backyard Barbie. Plus, Dry Times towels are eco-friendly, keeping you and the planet dry and happy. Right now, Dry Times is offering our listeners an exclusive deal. Save 15% off with the code GypsyGang. Don't just dry off in style with Dry Times and visit drytimes.com today. This episode is also brought to you by Dixon Quality, our go-to destination for top-notch essentials at dixonquality.com.au. Whether you're dressing up for the office or heading out for a weekend adventure, Dixon Quality has you covered with their range of durable and stylish apparel. From crisp, classic shirts that won't lose their shape to comfortable chinos that move with you, each piece is crafted to elevate your everyday wear. Step up your wardrobe game at dixonquality.com.au, where quality meets everyday style. Don't miss out. Visit and discover the perfect fit for your lifestyle. This episode is also powered by mxstore.com.au, Australia's largest destination for motocross gear and accessories. Whether you're a weekend warrior like me or a seasoned pro, MX Store has everything you need to hit the dirt running. From helmets and goggles to boots and protective gear, they've got the best brands to keep you safe and stylish on the track. Plus, MX Store offers fast shipping across Australia, so you can get back to riding in no time. And if you order before 2 p.m. on a weekday, you're going to get same-day shipping. So make some noise and hit the dirt only with mxstore.com.au. And last but not least, Tropical Auto Group, your go-to destination for all your automotive needs. Whether you're in the market for a new or used car, or you just need a service on your current vehicle, Tropical Auto Group offers a wide selection of cars, expert maintenance, and friendly customer service. Their team is dedicated to making your car buying and servicing experience smooth and stress-free. Plus, they have great financing options to fit your budget. And as always, members of the Gypsy Gang, our man Kyle is going to get you taken care of. Head over to tropicalauto.com.au to browse their inventory or book your next service. Tropical Auto Group has been driving the podcast forwards for years, and they will do the same for you. That's it from me. I hope you enjoy this episode with two legends of the game, Brock Feeney and Will Britt. From the gang called Gypsy. Gang and they come and get gang. Gypsy. Gang and they come and get gang. Gang. I'm at a gypsy. Gang. Gang. I'm at a gypsy. Mate, we've always got the hard-hitting questions on the Red Bull Ampol Racing quarterly report, and I'm pretty stoked. I'm always pretty stoked to do these, but I'm joined by me mate Will Brown this time around. Brock Feeney, he's a bit of a vet in the studio, but yeah, first one with Wilbur, and first of all, mate, congratulations on the deal, and we'll get into it. But it's been a pretty solid start for both of yous, actually.
Yeah, it's been a big start to the year, obviously, for me moving across. You're a bit uncertain what's going to happen. You know, I haven't been with the team before. Haven't had to put up with Brock this much. I thought I'll see how this goes. But it's been an awesome start to the year, that's for sure.
Brock, mate, sort of just business as usual for you. Like, what's his third year on the team now? And you know, you're just kind of, you're the veteran, really. You're the world's youngest veteran in supercars.
It's very scary, but... Yeah, look, I suppose not a lot's changed in how I operate this year, but new teammate. The cars have changed a little bit as well this year, but obviously I feel like as a team we're probably nearly the most stable, even though we've had one of the biggest driver changes of sort of the past history. But it's been good fun working with Will. We've had a lot of fun over the past couple of months, and as he said, it's been a ripper start to the year. So I feel like... you know, you do your first year of learning. The second year, we had a pretty solid year last year, but now it's time, I think, for both of us to try and make that step up and be there at the end of the year.
Yeah. So I'm gonna drill in on Will just a little bit, just with some of the, you know, the new changes that have happened. Personally, mate, it's really cool to see you. Now, obviously, known you for a bit because you've been kicking around the old Alpine Group offices for a while, and it's been really cool to watch the progression that you've had in supercars, and obviously, like the last couple of seasons has been pretty massive for you in terms of, you know, results and what you're able to do. Getting that phone call though from the Ampol Racing team to be a driver for, you know, arguably the best team in the sport. Take us through that particular phone call and what it means to actually, you know, get on with these guys.
Yeah, it was just it was one of those things I didn't expect. You know, last year I was going really well with Erebus, and you know, I was contracted for this year, so it was a really weird time for me. I was actually leading the championship after Townsville got a win up there, and yeah, leading it going into Sydney, and that's when everything went down. So it was a massive call. You know, you're leading the championship with a team you've been with for 6 years, and the best team probably in V8 Supercar history, 888, you know, Red Bull Ampol come knocking on the door, and obviously, you know, you want to listen and make that work, but it was a hard one for me to make the jump. You know, I knew I wanted to and wanted to move across to the team, but yeah, it was just making it all work was the hardest thing. So yeah, it took a few, probably a month or two, to get it all nutted out, and then when it got close, it sort of hit the media before it got done. So that was a hard thing to work through as well. You know, you're sort of in limbo for a bit there. You don't really have a contract either way, and yeah, it was sort of probably a little bit of a ballsy move at the time, but it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you've got like the emotions of, like you said, Triple Eight's the pinnacle of the sport, and you know, you've been working. Obviously, the results with Erebus were great as well, so it's like you kind of got into that winning position with that team. But it's like in every sport, there's a Honda HRC ride, there's a Ferrari drive, there's, you know, there is those teams, and I'm sure it's like, okay, I'm doing great over here, but man, you get an opportunity to go with a Ferrari or with an HRC. That's an itch that I feel like every driver or rider kind of has to scratch in their life. Is that kind of how it felt?
Oh, 100%. I think getting to drive with 888 Red Bull Ampol is a massive thing. I remember when Brock went in, I thought, look at this little prick straight going into a bloody Red Bull Ampol drive. I'm sure we all did, and we thought, far out, he's gone straight into the best seat and he's done a fantastic job. So for me to get hit up a few years later and you know, be able to join Brock here, as I'm sure every single driver on the grid, well, I know every single driver on the grid would love to race for this team, and it's what we all aim for. And for me to be sitting here now and be wearing the shirt and everything is a dream come true, and probably something that I didn't think had come about, you know, so soon or even ever. Like it's not a seat that comes up very often. I guess when Brock got the seat, a lot of people were like, they're sorted for probably 6-7 years. Like if Shane sticks around, he's got a lot of years left. Brock's got a lot of years left. I didn't see it coming up. So I'm glad Shane left and went to the States. He can stay over there. That was awesome. I was really bloody happy with that. But yeah, we'll let him stay over there. But it worked out well for me. But like I say, it's one of those things. I think that 888 have always done such a good job that they don't get rid of drivers. They make sure that the team do a fantastic job. They put the best drivers in the seat. And if you perform, you've got a long career ahead of you. So I looked at that side of it as well.
Yeah, and I guess that's true, eh? Like, it's really not a seat that comes up often. You don't see guys going in and out of the team. There's very long-term, it seems like they make very calculated decisions. They have long-term relationships. And like, dude, even, it's like they can't sack people. Like J-Dub's in there, you know.
We've joked that I've had a few written warnings already, and that I'm not always forget something. Like, or,
but they've got the most frigid HR person. They're like, oh, we can't let go of him. But I mean, that has to play into a decision of like, man, if I turn this down, who knows if this ever comes up again, you know? And then you've obviously got like the Red Bull part of it as well. I think Red Bull in Australia is one of Red Bull globally is one of the coolest brands that, you know, you can be a part of. So yeah, I guess heavy decision, but it's almost a no-brainer, right?
Yeah, I remember actually saying that in my head. If I turn down this opportunity or don't make this work, I'm going to kick myself forever. So I literally, at that stage when I said that, I thought I've just got to try do everything I can to make this work. And yeah, as I say, I was very fortunate with what happened there and Betty, you know, allowing me to do this. And it's a long-term thing, and that's the biggest thing for me. But yeah, I think looking at other teams, a lot of the time it gets to a stage, the driver might be quite good, but they have a few tough years or a tough year, and then they look at what's the reason. And generally, unfortunately, you know, the drivers get on the chopping block a lot of the time. So with 888, they seem to put the resources and their experience behind the drivers, that you don't seem to have those lull years or that sort of stuff. So yeah, like I say, that was a massive massive thing for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, dude, makes total sense. And what was... I feel like I'm always like kind of hating on the supercars media in a sense because I feel like there's work to be done. But what was the reaction from the media, and was it one of the harder media times you've kind of faced as a driver?
No, I think it just came out of the blue. Like, I don't think anyone saw it coming because, like I say, it was me and Brody contracted. We were both, you know, first or second in the championship then, and then it got dropped. I think the weekend straight after Sydney, the week after Sydney, it got dropped that Will Brown's the potential for AAA, and I don't think anyone expected. I know there was a bit of speculation around Richie Stenaway. You know, he'd been doing a good job. Should they put him in? But I knew I'd done, you know, with Erebus, they've done a very good job, but I'd won four races already that year and you know, I thought done enough to be one of the drivers, you know, to be the best decision for 888, if you know what I mean, the next guy. Yep. So, that probably didn't come out of the blue for me, but for the media it probably did. But it wasn't a tough time. I think it got received pretty well in the end.
Yeah, okay. Oh, that's good to know because, yeah, I'm sure, like, just the extra... I don't know. It's always something to think about, you know, like I think it's definitely very easy when you're in the media to, you know, you've got stories to tell or whatever, but there is like definitely a human on the other end of it that's still trying to do their job, still trying to do their best. And it can bring a lot of attention that is, you know, sometimes hard to deal with. And it's just like, it's not normal, you know, like in your every day-to-day life. Like if you turned your phone off and you didn't read the internet, like it's kind of not there. But then you turn your phone on, you go online and there's just this whole thing kind of happening and it can be tough to navigate.
Yeah, I feel like you get used to it, but it is a weird thing. Like, I don't think people realise that at home. We are just normal people. Like, you know, you grow up just being a normal kid from Toowoomba and all that, and then you go through this sort of yeah. stuff and the media side of it and everything. Luckily, I've never had anything too crazy in the media or be, you know, being bashed too much in the media. I've seen it's happened to some other drivers. But, yeah, it's a big thing in our sport right now with that side of it. But, yeah, I've been quite lucky, I think.
Yeah, and Brock, for you, like, I guess how far do you guys go back? Similar age, you know, similar kind of crew. What's the history with you guys in terms of, you know, friendship and racing?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say we're mates yet. Nah. look, to be honest, it probably goes frenemies. Back 10. Probably goes back 10 or more years. Probably 2013 or something like that. I reckon we probably first met. I started in 2012, which. When were you?
Well, I reckon it'd have to be. I started when I was 13. I'm 25 now, so yeah, 12 years, and I would have met you around then. So, yeah, it'd go back at least that far since I've known Brock, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think I found a photo not long ago. As soon as he got announced, I'm like, I've got to find this photo. There was a photo of me and Will on the grid at Ipswich. Yeah, it would have been a good 10, 11 years ago. So it's pretty cool. Like, Will's always been known as the happy kid to be running around the pits, chatting to everyone. I mean, as go-kart kids growing up, yeah, we always joke about it. We're playing bull rush, we're playing tackle footy and that. In between races, we're all hanging out with each other. And here we are 10 years later driving for the top team in Australia. So it's pretty crazy how it all works out. But yeah, then I bought Will's Toyota 86 that he won the championship with in 2018. That was my first ever race car, was Will's championship.
Did he sting
winning
you?
Car. Yeah, he's a used car salesman. Right. What do you reckon? No. It actually was the best buy. It was a great car. So he looked after it very well. But we've always known each other. We've always been mates. And yeah, the opportunity come up, it was... Yeah, there was options talking about, but it was, we're getting along great.
You can tell results, us the truth. Did you, did you see my name and did you say no?
Yeah, well, I put white out over the top of it and I'm like, yeah, no, we'll go to the next one.
Well, I mean, that's got to be a thing, right? Like, I'm sure, I don't know who it would be, but like, there's got to be two names or three names in the paddock where like they're on a whiteboard in the office and you poke your head in and you're like, hey, no and no.
Yeah.
100% no. It's like having a roommate, you know what I mean? Like, mate, he can't move in. He's a muppet.
Yeah, no, I said that about Will, but they didn't listen. Nah. To be honest about it, like, I didn't like, I suppose it all happened when Shane won Chicago. And then after that, it was like, okay, is something going to happen? And it sort of got dragged on till just before Sydney. And it was sort of in the teams, you were hearing whispers of it. I'd try and get something out of Jamie to figure out what was going to happen. So then the name sort of slowly started dribbling out. And I sort of, look, there's obviously... It wasn't just one person because Will was contracted at the time. So I was trying to figure out what was going to happen. But yeah, when Will's name came up, it was, I think it's a no-brainer in many senses. I mean, his driving speaks for itself. What he did last year was awesome. But then also the off-track stuff is such a bonus, you know, that comes with it. So it's been awesome to work with. We're having fun, you know. Like, I think it's great for the team. We're all just in such a great environment. We're all joking around. We're pretty similar personalities, you know. We're joking around before we get in the car and then it gets pretty serious. So I think it's worked out real well to young blokes. As he said, hopefully we're around for a long time to come.
Do you think that the sport's kind of cottoned on a little bit to just how important it is to have some good off track as well? I mean, you look at the success of Drive to Survive and then we'll get into Melbourne in a bit, but it's like, that's just the full Daniel Ricciardo show. And it's like, there's just so much value in having people that the fans enjoy and that can, you know, really want to dive in and make some great content and make some a good experience for the fans of the race team. It's just so much more than driving these days. Like, even in your short career in supercars, can you really see the change in that way?
Yeah, there's certainly a big push for it at the moment. I think that stems from a lot of what other sports are doing. And I think, you know, Drive to Survive's changed the game for sports worldwide, I think, and how it's such a big marketing thing. You know, I'm not a guru, but it's not hard to figure out how well that's worked for F1, you know. And a lot of people have tried it and it hasn't worked as well. But Supercars is putting a big push on, you know, trying to promote the drivers and really get... trying to open the doors up to show what we actually do behind the scenes, because I felt like we're not, I wouldn't say we're behind the times, but we're not on the forefront of that. So you look at, you know, like obviously Supercross and that, there's lots of guys doing the vlogs and behind the scenes and all that sort of stuff. Supercars isn't at that yet, but I think the cool thing about having me and Willie's is we're open to doing all that. And for me, it's like trying to attract the young fan base, you know. When we go to racetracks, our fans are, you go to Bathurst, they've been going there for so many years and they're always going to be with the sport. But it's when we're 30, 35 years old, it's about trying to bring those fans along the journey for the next 10 years. So I think that's what the cool thing is, where, you know, sometimes we do stupid TikToks and that, and we're trying to have some fun and, you know, show that, you know, we are normal people, but we can have a bit of a joke around as well.
So much like these days about how you sell the story, isn't it? Because like F1, I don't think the racing's that good, to be honest. I watch it, I enjoy it, but I mean, like, you know, a lot of people bag the supercar racing, and any day of the week I'd rather watch that for passing and that F1 sort of follow. But everyone loves it because they sell the story well. It's the show, it's the whole thing. They do such a good job of it. So you're always interested in watching it, but I wouldn't say the on-track's amazing.
I think supercars is one of the best in the world for on-track racing. Yeah. Like most categories you watch, it's like, oh, there's a couple of passes. We complain, you know, especially when Shane was here, it was pretty easy to predict. You know, if he pulled it, he was probably going to go on for a good race. But, I mean, look at Melbourne. It was out of control what the racing was like. So, yeah, we got a great product. If we can boost it up a little bit behind the scenes, I'm pretty sure we got a pretty awesome series here.
Yeah, and I guess that leads pretty perfectly into the livery reveal for this year. Yeah. Like, honestly, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, that was mega, obviously. It was pretty cool for me. You know, I've come across, I made the step across, which was, like I say, big, and then they go, it was nice that they had the, you know, the insight to go, we'll take it to Will's hometown and support him and get them all out there. So to have so many fans, I think we had about 9,000 show up in the end.
That's awesome. Insane, so, eh?
Yeah, well, I said after it, nearly, I think, like, the liveries for every team is just done differently, and that I think that supercars should do one each year of everyone's livery somewhere like that, and roll each team out one by one and do something really cool instead of just a photo on Instagram. You know, if we can get 9,000 people out there for the day, I'm sure we can get a lot more if there's other teams there as well. But it was really impressive. I remember we were watching from the we were just standing out there getting ready for our show, and we could just see the line of cars just rolling in, and we thought, oh, really? Like, there's a few people coming in, and then people were telling us they couldn't even get in, like the traffic was that backlogged and everything. And you know, I think we catered for 3,000 people, so like it was just way more than we expected.
Yeah, well, I think from what I heard, you guys were expecting between 3,500 to 4,000 people. And then it's just like basically all of Toowoomba shows up.
That was everywhere.
It was one of the coolest events that I've been to. Yep. And it was a supercars livery launch. Like, this guy's a big factor of that happening in Toowoomba, you know. But the amount of people that came was unreal. Like,
I think only half would have been Toowoomba people. Like, most people I talked to had come from Brisbane, Gold Coast. You know, I talked to a guy that had come from Canberra, and that's only the people we got time to talk to. So I'm sure, you know, there was plenty of people that came from far and wide. So it wasn't just a Toowoomba thing. I think you put that on anywhere, you know, people will come.
Yeah. What does it do for you as a driver, especially going into a new team? Like, I mean, I'm sure you're confident in your decision, like, all right, yeah, I'm basically going to the best team, but it's got to feel good as a driver to have that kind of turnout for, you know, the first event that you do as a driver, you know, in this new team, that, you know, people were that behind what you guys had going on.
Yeah, it's that day stood out massively to me. It was sort of like a pinch myself moment again, even after I had getting the drive, but just knowing how professional the team is, they do everything to the highest standard and that sort of thing. And I think it's big right now in the sport, like we were talking about, trying to promote it more, that they help build the drivers' names in a way. You know, they want us to be out there doing media, even if it's our own. So yeah, it's been awesome working with the whole team so far on that side of it.
How fun was it to just shut an airport down and just bust out bulk skids?
Yeah, it was sick. I think I took off from like our hangar in Toowoomba, which is just 10 kilometers away, flew over there in the plane, and then was able to do some burnouts, and then took off back over there. It was like the coolest day ever. I'm like, didn't expect to be doing this one day in my hometown. So it was mega. It was the best day.
Did they give you the key to the city? I feel like that's probably the only thing that, like,
pretty much
they
the
did
mayor of Toowoomba, mate. Like, he rolls around in like a Lamborghini up there now. He's got the gold chain. He's got a cane.
I don't know about that. Dad would probably hit me with a cane if I rolled around with bloody gold chains and that.
Oh, that's so good. Do people know much about your pilot background?
I feel like it's pretty common these days. I have a lot of people. I did a couple of YouTube episodes last year where I just did it myself, and it was real basic, but I got a pretty good reaction from that. And it was probably just that lack of time. I've struggled to do many more, but I'm building a plane down in Newcastle that's an ex Reno Air Race plane. So that was a big race over in the States that went for many years. Yeah. So I'm building one of them down there. And then, I've flown for about, I flew to my first Bathurst 1000 that I competed in. I literally got my license 3 days before, and that's how I remember when I got my license, because it was 2018. So yeah, I've had it for 6 years now, and I do a lot of flying. It's sort of a hobby, but it also helps so much. Like, me and Brock jumped in the plane Thursday, flew up to Bundaberg and came back Friday morning for a GMSV night. Like, it sort of just shaves so much time off the travel. And, you know, this year I'm looking at doing 24 events, which is 24 weekends away. So if you can shave that travel time off by a fair bit, it's always good.
And so what are you going to fly to pretty much all the events yourself?
Pretty much anything that's Queensland, New South Wales based, I fly to. So, you know, I'll try and fly to Sydney, Bathurst, Townsville, you know, even fly down to the Gold Coast and that sort of stuff. So a lot of them I'll try to get myself to, and then all the longer ones, like, you know, Melbourne, Perth, you know, or New Zealand, I'll travel normally. Yeah,
dude, it's pretty cool. Actually, I didn't know that you actually flew yourself to the races too. But yeah, dude, how convenient is it?
Yeah. It started out as a hobby, and then it just got more like, oh, this could really work out. And you know, if you take a couple of people, it's not ridiculous. It's, you know, it's commercial flight cost. So if you can put three or four bums in the seats. So, yeah, it works out really well. Like, we, you know, we did it. We're lucky enough Pilatus supported us for the Bathurst 12-hour.
Yeah,
hey, and
yeah, that was sick.
We flew down and back. You know, we finished a race at 5 o'clock or something, the 12-hour, and we're home at 7:30 or 8 o'clock at night. Like, it was just – it was so cool. Yeah, I'm surprised some of the drivers don't get together and do it more often, to be honest.
Yeah. I guess people probably just don't really know. Like, you're very in the aviation space, you know. Like, obviously, to do the hours and to, you know, do what you've got to do to get certified, like, I'm sure you just probably got a bit of that inside info, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that helps out a lot.
So, let's talk about Bathurst then, the first Bathurst 500. Pretty solid, really, like 1-2 off the start of the first race, 1-2 finish. I mean, yeah, pretty cherry way to start the season, boys.
Yeah, it was good. Like, I mean, I think we topped every session at Bathurst that weekend, every practice, qualifying, shootout and race. So, yeah, to start off the year, look, it was a solid year last year, but we weren't always the fastest. So, have a new driver on board and then come out. We shared the race wins in both the races, both got a pole position. It was like, how good is this, you know? And I suppose you get through that and you're like, man, we just got to keep this going. Like, it's such a good start to the year for the team. And but Chaz was right on our heels. But overall, as a weekend, it was unreal to kick off at Bathurst as well. And, you know, we were fast there last year, but to go out and have, yeah, such a great result certainly gives you a little boost for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and from your end, Will, obviously, you know, pretty good to start front row for the first race with the new team. But was it kind of, I guess, the dream start you were hoping for?
Yeah, I think to get the, you know, Brock got the provisional pole and then I was able to just get you in the shootout. But to start pole for my first ever race with Red Bull Ampol was really cool. You know, I think it's one of those hard things. It's like my engineer and the team don't know what to expect from me yet. You know, they haven't worked with me at a race weekend or even from a driving point of view. So, you know, to sort of, you know, show them that they did make the right decision was pretty cool to get, you know, a win there and a second and be like, you know, I'm a serious, hopefully a serious championship contender this year. And thanks for putting your sort of faith in me was a big part of kicking off the year strong.
What was the pressure like going into that race? Was there any extra pressure being the first one? And because it's kind of just been like, all right, home run, sign for the team, do our livery launch, home run. You know, then you're going into that first, like, does the pressure sort of start to build up a little bit?
I wouldn't say that I felt the pressure more than last year or anything like that. I'm not someone that overthinks stuff. I was just like, get on with the job, do what I can do. Don't think about any of the outside noise. Just do the job I can, and what will be the result at the end of the day. I think the biggest pressure of the weekend was both of us being fast. Like, you know, we're starting 1-2. Yeah. It's with a new team. I'm like, yeah, I can't just bloody run Brock off at the turn one or something like that. So
he tried.
I tried. I think I actually ran into at turn one trying to bloody avoid someone else or something. But yeah, like, it was just one of those things. It's you know, we were both very fast and I was like, okay, it was a cool battle between us. But yeah, the pressure I thought was pretty normal on a weekend. I feel like I put the same amount of pressure every weekend, no matter who I'm driving for. You know, I want to do a great job in anything I race. So yeah, I didn't feel like I added any more.
So what you're saying is Brock's a bit of a princess teammate and you've got a tiptoe around him.
I'm super sorry.
Yeah. That's right. No, not at all.
But I mean, dude, like the first pit stop and, you know, like the strategy there of like, dude, these guys are going to be on each other's ass the entire time. Like, the team must have just been going, all right, we really need to figure this out.
I think they're still trying to, but it's been interesting. I think I haven't, you know, worked in a team with this sort of stuff, to be honest. Like, you know, and probably also that last year, like, you know, when I was racing with Brody till mid-year, sort of for the championship, I'd qualify say he'd qualify first, I'd be fifth. Then the next race, I'd be second, he'd be sixth or something. So we weren't starting so close to each other, where this year me and Brock have been like 1-2. So it's so hard. You don't want to race each other and hurt each other's race, but then you also do in a way. You're like, oh, not yeah. hurt his race, but you know what I mean? You always want to, as a driver,
you have to separate.
Be leading.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a very interesting part. I think the big thing for us is we're both, I think, at the exact same stage in our career in a way. You know, we both haven't won a Bathurst, both haven't won a championship, and we're both hungry for it. So the team's like trying to look from the outside and be like, oh, we need to calm these two down.
Yeah, and I think you kind of can get into a position where you can really use your teammate. When you're both so good, you can kind of, at least from the outside, the way that I'd look at you boys is like, all right, we're going to have to deal with each other. How can we make this elevate us and separate from the pack? You know, because it's not like there aren't other amazing drivers in the field with you guys. So I think it comes with a bunch of stress in one way, but then it also comes with this, I don't know, like you're an ace in each other's back pocket if you play it right, that, you know, you can really use each other to pull away from the rest of the guys.
Yeah, I think it's the coolest position to be in. And, you know, when we have a bad qualifying, we're like, far out, we're probably not going to be 1-2 here. Like, what a privilege it was yesterday to be in that position. But you want someone that's going to push you as hard as you can. And look, we both had that last year with both of our teammates. But this year, being 1-2 so often, and even when we're not 1-2, we're still right next to each other. So it's a great position to be in, I think. Yeah, hopefully we can see over the next few years we push each other to another level where we both want to beat each other as much as, you know, each other. We both want to win, but there's such a big team thing at Triple Eight, and it's, you know, something that I suppose is very, very new for Will, but at the same time sort of for me battling so much. So it's been cool. The team's probably a lot more stressed than we are. We're just going out and racing and trying to win, but they're trying to play the team role and make sure everyone's happy, and it all sort of works out. So, you know, everyone's just trying to make sure that we don't end up hating each other and we're going to get along well.
I feel like we're like pushing each other. Like the biggest thing is in qualifying, I make one little mistake and I'm like, I bet you Brock's pit me. I bet you he's got pole. And then I know I made that little mistake. There was a 10th. And then I come through. I'm like, oh, what am I? And they're like, yeah, you're P2, Brock's P1. I'm like, shit, if I didn't make that mistake, I might have got it. So, and I think in other teams, drivers don't have that. They make one little mistake, they qualify fifth. But, you know, if they don't have a teammate as good, they're still ahead of their teammates. So they can still sort of be like, oh, the car wasn't that good. You know what I mean? Yeah. If we tune up the car, it could have been pole, when really it was probably a small mistake. And I think we got caught in that a couple of times in 2022 before we went to Gen 3. And, you know, sometimes you could blame the car when maybe it wasn't that. And I think that's the best part about me and Brock. You know, if you make one little mistake,
there's nowhere to hide.
There's nowhere to hide. You know that the car can do it because the other one's first. So I think that's a big thing. We're not running around in circles trying to find a new setup or anything like that because you made one little mistake. It's actually just, you know, you go, oh, yeah, it was my fault. You know, I got to press on with it. So, I think having two really good drivers is such a benefit in our game.
Yeah, it's like there's just that extra layer of accountability that, you know, you just can't hide from the facts, you know. It's so easy as a driver to come in when you're going to be the top dog in the team no matter what and, you know, point the finger. But it's like, yeah, the facts are the facts at Triple Eight this year, you know. And is it because, like, do you think that you guys have just really, the team's figured out the car and you're both driving like the best you have in your career, and that's kind of the combination? Like, do you think it's one side more than the other, or?
It's probably just a bit of everything. You know, I think the team's always been super fast the past 20 years. They've always been right in the hunt for the championship. But look, we were very good last year, but we're going up a team that were just as good, you know. On our day, it was sort of us or Erebus. So I think we have made a step forward this year. I think the team's done a great job over the off season to give us that, maybe it's half a tenth, you know, maybe it's a tenth. I'm not too sure. But then for us, where I feel like every year we're going on, we're just going to get better and better, and we're still super young. We're still pretty fresh in our supercars career. So, you know, some people moved on this year and it's time for sort of other guys to step up. So I think me and Will are putting in a big effort not only at the race weekends, but I mean, before the season, we were like, we were 9-to-5 workers for the first couple of weeks. Now I'm not, but we were in there heaps, you know, where we were grinding it out, doing the work, figuring out how we're gonna be best prepared for this season. I think that all shows up as well.
And so, I mean, this one's kind of only for you, Brock, but what's the difference this year from last year? Like, what have you guys found?
Yeah, it's just, I suppose, more knowledge than where we were last year, but the cars have changed a little bit aerodynamically. We've got a little bit more downforce this year. To be honest, it's pretty hard to pick. Like, at the Oz Grand Prix, you could tell a little bit through the high-speed stuff, but... I feel like we're in a really good spot with where our cars are. You know, I obviously don't want to talk too much about setup stuff, but we're not changing. We're not changing much, you know. We're in a great window, but even between me and Will, our cars aren't identical on race weekends. You know, we can try different stuff, and we seem to be in a really good window where we're at the moment. But at the same time, on Saturday at the Grand Prix, we qualified like 6th and 9th, and we're like, okay, we're. You can't get complacent where you are. We always got to keep sort of pushing forward. So for us, I suppose it's a big thing this year is like, I had Shane, who was like the big guy in the team who you could always sort of trust his feedback. Now it's like, it's up to me and Will to really lead this team forward.
So you're telling me you can't trust my feedback?
No, no. We're a couple of fresh blokes.
And this year, it's all on me to make all the decisions.
Will's useless.
It's been cool. And, you know, It's up to us to really help the team drive the cars forward.
And big, like, I guess for you, obviously the Erebus car was pretty quick last year, but big change, hard to adapt to. Like, I mean, obviously you've got in wheeled the thing pretty solid, but like that doesn't mean it was easy.
Yeah, I think you know, the Erebus cars were fast last year, and now we've got all the same equipment. Like, you know, the Gen 3 cars, they're very similar. So I didn't find the drive.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Having part hard really at all, you know, it was just like, you know, you go from Winton in an Erebus car, even if you bring it up to QR, it would have been a change learning the new track in the car. So for me to jump in the 888 car, Red Bull Ampol, it wasn't the car that was the hard part. It was just getting used to the team, working with new people. You know, I walk into Erebus at the end of last year and you know what you can say to people and have fun with and get away with. I walk into, you know, 888 like a timid dog. I'm like, what can I get away with here? You know, I better not. Yeah. Am I allowed to sit on this chair here? Is someone going to yell at me? Like, you're like walking around now. I'm all right. I've gotten used to everyone, but it's just getting used to everyone and just working with everyone in the team and building those relationships that, you know, sort of, oh yeah, that's, you know, I get along with all these guys and that side of it.
Yeah, because you can't, everyone's cool and everyone's nice, but you can't fake time together and like going through the trenches, you know, and I think that's kind of one of the beautiful things about motorsport is it's long ass hours, you're grinding, you're trying to just do everything you can. You're looking over to your left and he's not going home yet, so you can't go home yet. And I think it's those type of days and those are the environments that actually build the real friendships and relationships in racing. And like, everyone's nice and cool, but you can't fake that side of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think just the more you do with people, you know, I went with my engineer and Brock on the weekend. Last week we were over in NZ, and after we did our testing on the track, we decided to go to Rotorua and do the luge and just mucking around, running into each other, making jokes, and we'd come down and pay each other out and that sort of stuff. It just builds the relationships that you just get, you know, just more familiar with each other and just, yeah, better working relationship, but also a friendship as well. And that's something that, yeah, I definitely had with a lot of the guys at Erebus at the end. And it's been good to start that off at Triple Eight and get along with everyone so early.
Yeah. And so before we move on to the AusGP, how was Bathurst for you guys, like, to kick off the season? Brock, you know, Bathurst wasn't the best to you last year. You know, does it feel good to go to that place kind of early in the season and, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a monkey off your back, even though it's, you know, half race distance?
Yeah, it's a weird one. Like, we had the 12-hour the weekend before. We were racing the Mercedes GT3 there. Back-to-back weekends at Bathurst to start the year. It's like a mixed one, you know, people view on it. Like, we've already sort of done two Bathurst shootouts for the year where we sort of, you know, the Bathurst shootout for the 1,000, such a special moment. But I never want to talk bad on Bathurst because I absolutely loved driving there for 2 weeks. Like, I felt like I knew every crack on that track after 2 weeks of racing there. Like, it was, yeah, it's so hard to explain to people how cool that place is to drive a race car. So to have 2 weeks there and, you know, to get a win and a podium there was pretty awesome. People talked about, is that payback for last year? No, I'll try and get that in October. You know, it's like great to start the year well, but the big one's still the big one. But yeah, it's cool. It's a great place to drive the car. But as always, as the driver, October's our big Bathurst. You know, that's the one that we always want to. Yeah, that is the Super Bowl. So we did the what's the one before the Super Bowl? You know, you did the conference final. Yeah, you did the conference. You know, you still get to go there playing in the big stadium. But yeah, we get to go to Vegas in October and you know, and play the Super Bowl. That's sort of how you explain it.
Yeah. So you stepping back a little bit from the GT stuff this year?
Yeah, it's a bit of a, like, I'd like to be doing it. And our calendar's so spread out this year, like, I'm already getting pretty bored, like, waiting between races, to be honest. Like, I feel like I'm not doing enough. But, yeah, I had the opportunity to do pretty much the endurance championship for GT. So that was the 12-hour, which I raced in a pro car. And then I was supposed to do Spa 24-hour and Indy 8-hour. But the Indy 8-hour for me was pretty much a write-off. It was the weekend before Bathurst 1000. Time difference, you know, I'm going to race pretty much on a Monday. And by the time I get back, it was never going to work. And then Spa
leave him over there.
Yeah, he doesn't. Like, he wants me to do it. But yeah, then Spa was a pretty tough one. Like, do I do it? You know, it's such a cool race. Like, Spa 24 hours, like,
yeah,
pretty much top of the bucket list. But same thing, week before Townsville. Spoke to some guys that had done it before. Shane's done it before and that. And yeah, it's one race. I decided not to do it just based on the fact that I really want to put my best foot forward for supercars. But yeah, when that got announced, people were like, oh, you're stupid not to be doing that. But yeah, I think that's what's best for me. I'm trying to put a mature hat on and think, if I had a bad weekend at Townsville or I couldn't sleep or something like that, I'd be pretty bummed with myself over, you know, a race, which I feel like I can probably do in the next couple of years if I really want to.
Well, you're still, you're only 14.
Like, yeah, exactly. Got plenty of time. Hopefully on my 16th birthday, I'll get to go there. But yeah, so hopefully I can find some drives. If any GT guys want me to do some one-off races, happy to do it. But it's just so hard trying to line it up. Like, our calendar's so spread, but every race that you try and find is the same weekend or the weekend before.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think you made the smart decision.
Yeah,
and like you said, you got a lot of time.
I'm sure I regret it on that weekend, but when I rock up to Townsville and I'm fresh, I'll probably feel pretty happy about it.
Oh, yeah, and it's just one of those things where, like, if something happened, you just be...
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just... it's just because it's on the opposite side of the world. You know, if it was in Asia, like, it'd be a no-brainer, and that's why I did it last year, because I was same time zone. I'd go to sleep, I'd wake up back in Oz, and it was happy days. Like, it was not a problem at all. But doing the Euro stuff, I went there a couple of years ago and struggled quite a bit getting back into a normal routine. And to think that you get back, you jump straight on a plane, go to Townsville and or any race, and you're straight into media for the week. And yeah, it's a pretty big consequence if you have a bad weekend. Especially when this bloke's pretty fast, you know, it can
hurt. Yeah. So we'll talk about the Oz GP. I actually missed all of it. I was flying and traveling and doing all that. So you're going to have to really talk me through. What happened? What went down? Was it a good weekend for the
a
boys?
A lot happened that weekend. I feel like that was a very solid weekend for us. Oz GP is just one of those ones that can go so wrong. You've got four races We've got two races, so you know, instead of having two race starts to stuff up, you've got four race starts, you've got four first laps where you can get taken out and all of that sort of stuff. So it adds a lot of stress on the weekend, even with the qualifying and that. So, you know, generally you'll find, you know, someone will win the weekend and have a 19th place position or something in one of the races because something didn't go to plan. But just had a really solid weekend, both of us, better than we could have expected. So, I got a first and 3 seconds. And what did you get? Two firsts?
Two wins, third and fourth.
Third and fourth. So, yeah, it was just a really solid weekend from both sides of the garage.
And how do the, I mean, no pit stops in the races? Like, there's, you know, some really different things that kind of get thrown at you at that Oz GP. Like, how is it to adapt to everything being so different and you're just not the main show?
we were literally, you know, pushed to the back of the paddock. Like, we weren't in pit lane, we're out the back. But yeah, it's a weird one for us, not doing pit stop races. Doing I think it was 14 lap and 19 lap races was pretty interesting. And The hard one is, it's called a sprint race, but we, you know, you can't drive flat out for 19 laps. You know, you're still going to fade a lot. So fortunately, you know, we're in a position where our cars were fast and we're up the front, that we could sort of just manage that race from the front. But it's a hard one. People go, should we be there? Should we not? It is one of the coolest events we go to all year. It's amazing to be there with F1, to check out all the stuff. And the fans that are actually there, like Thursday, there's only, I think, us and Porsche that are racing. The amount of people that turn up is like pretty awesome. Yeah. So I think we do bring a little bit to the event, and to race in front of all those people is, yeah, something else.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, like, what is it like to kind of step into another series and, you know, you're obviously, yeah, like, you're not the main draw, but there's got to be some huge positives that come from it for you guys, like personally, for the team, for the sport.
Yeah, I think it's massive for everyone. I think the viewership numbers for the weekend's massive for you know, the Supercar Championship. I'm sure that's why they want us there, you know, having so many people watching us on Sunday morning before F1's massive. So especially for all our sponsors. But yeah, I thought it was a bit of a tough one. I thought when we got moved out of the garages for F2, you know, it was like, okay, I understand they're F2. And then they didn't even use their pit lane. They still walked up to F1 and did pit stops up there. So it was like, what's the point? Like, you know, if they were using their pit lane, I would have understood. So I think if we could get back into the garages there, do a little bit longer races, you know, I know... Even if they're short races, we're still going to go hard. Like, I know some people, like, it was awesome because it was sprint racing and everyone raced so hard. But I think everyone would have raced that hard even if it was, even if there were pit stops. And the hardest thing is there is that we don't get the time slot long enough. So, you have Cam and Matt Payne take each other out like they did. And then where, you know, we shorten a race from 14 laps, it was already short, to 7 laps or something like that. So, you know, for our fans sitting at home, I think it's a bit disappointing from that side. But, I think it'd be cool to do a bit longer races, but I still want to be there. Like, I think we need to be at the Grand Prix and at the F1, but just get a little bit longer races so our fans can watch us for a bit longer.
And what's the track like to drive and race?
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, it's so different to what we're used to. And like, we're going to NZ next. We've gone Bathurst and then the Grand Prix and then NZ, which is a super tight track. So it's like it is an F1 track. It's like MotoGP, F1, you know, super wide, super fast and flowing. So really different for us. It's not like what we're used to as supercar drivers.
It's kind of like riding a 450 on a 110 track is what we're going to. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, compared to where we've been, it'd be like sort of doing that in a way.
And now that's the perfect Grand Prix is like a 110 on a 450 track.
Yeah, yeah, you know? That's right. Yeah, literally. You're just flat everywhere. Yeah, yeah. Top gear. But it's interesting, Taupo. I think it's a tight track and it looks hard to pass. So yeah, it's just going to be so different to what we've done at the start of the year. You know, the I don't know what the average speed difference would be, but it'd be a lot. You're so slow around here, second gear, you know, a lot of places it'd be, wouldn't it? I reckon you might even get first a couple of times. So it's quite an amazing change, and I think that's a cool part of the championship though. There's so many differences in tracks and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, man, I had some pretty heavy FOMO at the OzGP. I got the invite from Red Bull and I had to send the email back and I was like, had tears coming down the face. I will not be attending this. So my history of being at Melbourne F1 was turned down this year an invite. I turned down an invite last year. And then the year before was the COVID year and I was there and like we were doing we had the full podcast like set up in the pits and we had this epic lineup done. I did Giz and J-Dub and then had a little thing with Max the day before and then COVID and I just got yanked. So I just have like the worst history. So this year I was like, you know what? I'm not even watching it. I'm done. I'm fine. I'm over it. I'm not watching a highlight. Like, it doesn't exist to me this year.
Yeah, that's true. It was cool there. Like, the energy station and what Red Bull put on there. Like, unreal. I'm not leaving.
Don't tell me.
I ended up leaving early this year and I was like, why'd I do that? Like, I would have had a good time there. That's for sure.
Oh, man. They go so hard. Like, I did, luckily enough, get to go to the F1 in Vegas. And man, I've been to a lot of energy stations around the world and Vegas was absurd, bro. Like they fully, I think it was a new one. It was the first time they'd ever done it. I wonder if they actually ended up flying that around and that's what they used in Melbourne. But
I think they
did.
It
was like, is that the one? Okay.
That was the same one as last year. It must be a different one.
I thought
one,
they said they move it around. Like
they do, but
with
I think they got quite a few sort of.
Yeah, they got around. Yeah, they got a bunch of them. But yeah, dude, like the one Vegas, like Disclosure played and like they had all these epic bands and they had, it was out of control, like lobsters and steak dinners and it was. It was pretty wild. So
I don't know about going to Vegas. You know, every elite athlete I see go to Vegas. You know, they'll look at the lions there all day. Like I'm like, I know about Vegas. Nothing good comes out of there by the looks of it.
Yeah, honestly, it was an unreal event. Like had pretty epic tickets. I don't think you could not enjoy when you've got the Red Bull pass at an event like that. But like the weekend itself in Vegas was sweet. Like I thought it was my wife's first time in Vegas, so it was kind of cool, you know, showing her that. But it wasn't, it was busy, but if you go there on New Year's or you go there on, any normal big Vegas event, like Vegas is just so well equipped to handle so many people. The biggest thing was like how cold it was, dude. Like I just can't believe that the cars could keep their tires warm and like how much that would actually play into the racing. But yeah, they done an awesome job and it was nowhere near the shit show that everyone said it was going to be. But I just don't think you can beat Australia, Melbourne. Melbourne's one of the best cities in the world. The weather, like you've got the sun, you've got the whole vibe that comes with Australia and like obviously the celebrities that come out for it and the vibe around F1 in general. So I think Melbourne's a pretty solid GP as well.
Yeah, it's unreal. I went to the Oz Open at the start of the year as well and in Melbourne and like literally all the tennis players just go, this is like, they call it the happy slam. Like they're like, this is the coolest event that we come to. Like everyone just loves coming to Australia and like the fans in Oz are, there's some pretty cool ones like Japan on the weekend that they go to another level, but Aussies are cool. You know, Aussies are awesome. They're awesome fans. So, yeah, I think everyone enjoys coming here. So, it's a good one to put on a good show.
What was some of the notable interactions or hangs that you had at the OzGP?
Yeah, it was one of those things. The hardest thing for us is no one was allowed in our pits, so it was a bit of a weird one. Like it was such a busy weekend, it didn't feel that busy because, you know, we could walk around our pits and not have any fans hassle us, which was not hassle us, but you know what I mean. It's generally so cool that you walk from the back of your garage and you get so many people want an autograph and all of that. You think, how cool is this? But we didn't have that at the Grand Prix in a way, which was disappointing. You know, we love having the fans in there. And then, I think going into the energy station was pretty cool. You know, the Inspired Unemployed were in there, a bunch of people. I see Zac Efron went in there, wanted a photo with him, didn't see him, so it was disappointing.
Will Brown was in there as well.
There was some cool people in there. I think it was just seeing like, oh, yeah, look who's here, look at this. So I think there was just some cool parts of it with that.
We did the garage tour. Like, we both got to go in and check out, the Red Bull Racing F1 team garage, and it's like a spaceship in there. Like, it is mind-blowing.
It's wild,
Oh, it is another level, another 10 levels, actually. But, check out the steering wheel, that sort of stuff. And then Will, Hollywood over here, got an early flight home. But I got to go into the RB garage and watch a bit of the race with the headset and that on, which was pretty cool. So the hard thing is, which I suppose a few years in, you sort of get it, but we're there to do a job. And it's very hard on a weekend like that because there's so many distractions. Like, the first year I went, I was just like, how cool is this? You know, checking out F1, you met Checo. But I suppose as you go further on, it's, you know, you're used to it, but it's trying to switch off and go, okay, I've got a race. Sometimes it was like 8 hours later, but it's I need to be sharp at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I can't go and go check out F1 cars and hang out with all my mates. You know, you got to sort of flick the switch a little bit.
Yeah. Was that your first time like running the headset and stuff for the race?
I think me and Shane maybe did qualifying a few years back, but race is pretty cool, like listening to it all. And it's just cool being in the garage. Like, it's just awesome to get that experience and see what it's all about and how the teams operate. It's, you know, it's pretty special to have that opportunity. So, it was awesome.
It's pretty wild. I wonder, like, F1 obviously does such a good job with that stuff, but man, the first time I went and listened to like a quali session or like a free practice with the headset on, there's so much going on. And it gives you this perspective that you pretty much just can't look at times from any of the practice sessions unless it's like an actual, they're doing like quali simulations, you know, because like they'll be going through, it's like, okay, we want you to go through turn one at 100 kilometers an hour, you know, so they're on the such specific instructions at every single time that they're on the track. Like, you kind of just think drivers are just out there sort of doing their thing, but F1 is so detailed and so specific, and it's almost like the engineers are driving the cars right up into the race.
The engineering is next level in that side of it. I haven't been on the radios, but I think that's such a cool thing. Like, the radio side of it going back is getting that out in the public and showing, you know, it's like you get to go in and listen to that and you're like, wow, that's amazing. And the average, you know, punter that's at home wants to listen to that. So I'm big for, I think supercars should have like a Shit Chat Friday or something and show all the radio chat from, you know, New Zealand or Taupo of just stuff we've said to our engineer. You know, you joke around sometimes with your engineer, muck around. I think it'd be cool to interact and show fans that side of it more as well, and what happens behind the scenes on the radio, because, you know, there is a lot we go on about.
Yeah, to be honest, even like I did qualifying in 22 over there and I got to listen to headsets. It's different in some ways, but in other ways, I think we nearly, you know, it's very similar in supercars. We're still talking about the same stuff, but I feel like as a driver, the engineer's talking a lot about feedback from us, you know? So when we come in, we're like talking all these setup things and going through a lot of specific stuff, where in qualifying, they can't really change much in F1. So you'd sort of come in and they'd have a little debrief, but it was sort of pretty, you know, let the guys go do their thing. So in some ways it's quite different because there's so much tech going on, but in other ways it's so similar in the same way. So supercross now, mate.
No, mate, I'm pushing. I think we're getting closer, actually.
Yeah.
We'll finish with some soupy chat if you want. Good. So Yeah, I was going to ask, like, what is the difference, or how different is what you guys are doing versus, like, the feedback with the F1? Because I feel like from my perspective, what it seems like is that they're not as much going off direct driver feedback because there's so many data points on F1 cars, and they've basically got all this wind tunnel data that they're trying to correlate to real world data, and they're trying to marry the difference between those two, and it's not so much driver feedback as it is just straight driver execution on the track. Like, we need you to do this right now.
Yeah.
Is it different in supercars in that they're asking you to do those things, but the data's not the same, so they're kind of more relying on the human feedback?
I feel like it, you know, I've probably seen that a little bit more this year because, you know, Triple Eight have so much more resources and I guess sim stuff compared to what I'm used to where I was from last year with Erebus. So last year for me, it was all driver feedback. Everything was, you know, did you have understeer? Did you have oversteer? And then I guess when I moved across here this year, a little bit of it was hard. I know I was talking with Andrew a few times. He's like, mate, can you
Engineer
just,
Will
you're
Brown
confusing me.
Here.
Can you just like, he's like, just shut up for a second. But you know, it was just a bit different. Like, it was probably, you know, for me moving across, it's probably a little bit more here. And not that they only go off that, but, you know, sim stuff and looking at the data and delving into that a bit more. And even though they take our feedback on board, definitely. But I think F1 would just be another step to that, if you know what I mean. Like, they've just got so much data that they try and decipher that, mainly because they probably think that that's the best way to set up the car rather than worrying about what a driver says. But yeah, it's a hard one. And sometimes I find, you know, you can go through all this stuff and the engineers can go through all this stuff and you expect this outcome and it doesn't happen. Yeah. So sometimes it definitely does. But I think driver feedback is so important. But, you know, you work with so many people. I think it's the same thing no matter what category. Yeah. Like, supercars run at such a high level and it's so hard to be up the front. You know, even though the F1 guys are working at another level, it'd be a lot of the same stuff, talking to their engineer, you know, saying where they have understeer or oversteer, how they think you should overcome it and that. So yeah, I don't think it could be that much different.
Yeah. What from your end, Brock?
Yeah, it's pretty much what Will said. I mean, yeah, we have nowhere near the amount of data that F1 does, but yeah, I suppose a lot of it is, you know, it's a bit of a mix in supercars. You know, probably in session, it's more driver. Like, I come in, you go, I got a bit of understeer mid-corner, a bit understeer on exit, and you sort of make a change off that. But then you go back, you have a few hours, you sort of delve into what you can actually do. But, you know, I don't know a whole lot about F1. I haven't been in the scene, like, actually at an event. But, you know, there's so much simulator stuff. You know, they've got reserve drivers back testing stuff at the sims all weekend. There's just so many people to look at data and go through it. You know, the Red Bull team said they've got one person per car to specifically look at starts. Like, that's just crazy to us. It's like, that's, you know, yeah, one start per weekend. But it's such an important role. So for us, it's, you know, what have we got? We've probably got four engineers on a weekend, you know, two between the two of us and then another two guys looking over us. So the amount of people is just probably the biggest difference. I think they take away like 70 to a weekend, but then they've probably got 200 back at the factory watching it. You know, it's mind blowing. And obviously that comes at a big cost, but yeah, there's so many differences. But as Will said, you're talking about, in a way, you're talking about the same stuff. You know, we're still driving a race car with four wheels, a throttle and a brake. You got understeer and oversteer. But theirs is just a little bit more technical.
Yeah, yeah. And Will, so you touched on like doing more of the sim stuff at Triple Eight. Was that pretty much your off season? Like, you, once you kind of got in the uniform and got to work, like, it was really buckling down and getting in the sim, or?
Yeah, it's not really. When we talk about sim stuff,
don't tell them too much.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. In Australia, but it's not really drivers. It's more around the engineering side, and it's not actually hopping in a car and driving it. And that's a lot in F1 as well, isn't it? But yeah, for me, you know, it was just I looked at a lot of Shane's stuff from last year, to be honest. You know, I had the access to that now, and I knew he did a great job in the racing last year, so I knuckled down and had a look at a lot of that sort of stuff. And yeah, as I said, I'm a bit basic, so I didn't want to overthink it. And you know, I had a good year last year. I didn't want to be like, I got to change all this stuff. I just wanted to find little bits and pieces where I could to improve what I'm doing and try, you know, just, I'd be mad if I came to this team and didn't look at some of the, you know, data and footage and all of that that's available to me.
No, fair enough. And little highlight with the whole country music scene, mate, meeting one of the big dogs in that. How was that experience?
Yeah, that was cool. My missus was losing it. She's like into all the country music stuff, and I knew his songs, but I'm not someone that knows people's names. So she's like, "Oh, I can't believe you're going down." And then I met him, and he was an absolute legend, Tyler Hubbard. So he beat me in the go kart race in the end, which is a bit
how does that work?
We're having a good little battle. I got a flat tire, okay? No, I'm joking. So he did that. But got to go backstage. Took a few of my mates down that are massive. They love the country music scene. And I've gone and camped there a couple of years. I went out with Chaz Mostert a few years ago, and we had a great time camped there for 3 days. And it's just a cool thing to go and do with your mates, I reckon. So, that was a cool little part to go out there and have a muck around, then go backstage with him the next night and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Listens to Taylor Swift.
Yeah, what's on the rotate? Yeah,
I do listen to Taylor Swift. You're Swiftie, to be honest.
You're Swiftie, Brock.
Am I a Swiftie?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You know, I listen to the songs here and there, but I'm not putting it on like before a race. It's not.
What's in the rotation currently?
Me, I do listen to a lot of rap stuff. I've been listening to Fred again. He was out in Oz not long ago.
Yeah.
You know, listened to a fair bit of his stuff. That's just like, it's sort of like party music, but it's just like, you can sort of play with anyone. It's not that bad. Where I feel like Will probably doesn't want to listen to my hardcore rap stuff that I play.
In Sydney in 21, when I won my first race, I was into this Adele song like real slow. Yeah. And like, Brody's like, what are you listening to here? And I like, I don't listen to any sort of G up stuff. All my stuff's like slow. Hello. Like, yeah, hello. Like, yeah, that's right. Like, it's quite random. He'd always laugh. But I don't really listen to rap, I wouldn't say.
Dude, that's so funny. So, Brock, let's. Little bit of Soupy, you've been dying to talk about some Supercross, mate.
Talking about this.
He said to me this morning, he's like, "Oh, I hope Jace wants to talk just about Supercross the whole time." And I'm like, "Yeah, right." Like, "Oh no, not much. I've been watching it a bit." Here's Brock just G'ing up for it.
Yeah, we're pretty in on the series, I think, me and Brock. What's your overall takeaway, mate?
I mean, it's, well, stating the obvious, how good's Jet Lawrence?
Dude.
I just love that he bought a Rolls Royce or whatever he bought. That's just funny.
Just so different. Like, and obviously the talk, him and Tomac, like, they're just so opposite. I think him and all the guys are so opposite, except for maybe Danger Boy coming up. But it's so, man, I know you do so much, but I absolutely love that sport. That is like my favorite thing to watch, and how cool everyone is that does it, and the personalities, and it's such a raw series. But to see Jet, an Aussie kid, come in. I think we used to race him and Hunter way back when. I'm not sure if I think I raced him a couple of times, but like you'd see him around the track and I was like, man,
yeah,
these kids are ripping.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. But these kids were ripping since they were little kids. So to see them go over do that, certainly earning the big bucks, it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
Oh man, and Jet has just been like, if you think about how much has gone wrong for him this season as well.
Yeah.
You know, like he's had he's thrown a couple wins away. Like he had the drama with Barsha last week and the red flag and the Ambo flag. Like,
yeah.
He has had a rough go at it and he's still winning the championship in his rookie year. Like he should have wrapped up the season almost, you know.
Yeah, it's
pretty, pretty phenomenal. And yeah, I mean, I think we're in for, I don't see, there's no one coming up right now that I think can touch him. Like, you know, maybe we wait for the Hayden rivalry, but it's like, man, I think we're just entering a crazy McGrath style era.
You know, like,
yeah.
We've been training Will up on the MX bikes.
Well, I was thinking maybe we have to, like, we both started in motorbikes, me and you both stopped at the same time. Maybe at the end of the year we have, like, a prep race, like, you know, get a couple of 125 two strokes out and see,
I'm not doing see who wins.
we'll just do some motocross, some flat track.
What we should do, we should get a couple Starks. That way it takes out a lot of complications, like they're very, very safe. We can really, it's basically an electric. Yeah, electric mount bike.
We need some noise.
Have you ridden one yet?
No. Oh, I haven't. They're pretty cool, aren't they? They're like a proper motocross bike, though, aren't they, these days?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, they're insanely fast.
Is he? Right, okay, right. Well, maybe we get them. Let's do it.
But yeah, I think we could set that up. But the beauty of it is we could mic you boys up and we'd be able to hear the absolute nonsense that you came up with.
I think I'm more capable on a 110 than something fast. I just want something slow, you know?
You want the Peewee 50 that doesn't even have gears.
Yeah,
you're
I was
just
a
like,
weapon on the Peewee 50 back in the day.
We'll have to screw your screw in that you can only do 15k an hour like your dad did back in the day. We have training wheels on. Who can do the fastest, buddy?
The old throttle screw. I'm fully on board. I reckon we could get a sick Red Bull livery going. We could maybe I'll do like a little build for you. A couple 110s. Get out a bit of a course going.
There we go.
I'd be all about it.
Jamie lets us.
Just don't ask. Easy to get forgiveness and permission, boys.
I love that. it has been a crazy season to watch, and it's funny. That's literally my wife. It was her first Supercross at A1, and like Jet won the race. We're up in the Alpine Stars box, and everyone's cheering and hugging and high-fiving, and the first thing my missus says at the end of it, she goes, "What in the Max Verstappen just happened?" Yeah. And I was like, that is the best call of what is about to happen for the next little bit, because, man, he's just so good.
So many stories, like, who can stop him, you know? And I'm a big fan of other guys in the sport as well of him, so it's just every week you're like, is Tomac going to beat him? Is Webb going to get him? You know, there's still... It's just about who can stop him now, which is cool. There's going to be cool stories, and you'll still see some pretty awesome races, I reckon. And it's not done. It is not done yet.
No.
Webb close. It's exciting.
Dude, who is the last person that you would want to have in second place at the end of a 450 Supercross championship?
It's still like, it's a scary thought.
Riding so good.
Better message my missus and say cancel the 8 p.m. dinner. You know, Brock's got onto Supercross chat. We're gonna be here all night.
We're gonna be here all night.
The podcast
That's awesome. Well, hey, we'll end it on some rapid fire questions. This is from the team. So, how much time do you usually spend on the simulator to prepare for a race weekend?
I'm probably more with footage, and mainly footage, actually. So I don't spend a lot of time on the simulator. If it's an easy track, because, you know, sometimes you don't have access to the track. So if it's Bathurst, I'll spend, you know, the week before prepping and doing a bit on the sim. But, you know, for me to get Taupo is quite hard. So I haven't done any for Taupo, but we've been testing over there recently.
I do probably like five, maybe 10, probably five laps at a sim, like especially Taupo, to learn it. I don't want to learn any habits, but I want to figure out where it goes. But then during the week, like, I probably won't drive the tracks we're going to, but like, I'll smash out heaps of races and that in different cars and all that sort of stuff.
All right. Gen 3 or Gen 2?
Gen 3.
Gen 3.
All right. What other sports do you watch?
Supercross, MotoGP and F1.
Yeah, I feel like I've been watching a lot of NASCAR since Shane's gone there. I've really enjoyed that side of it. So I watch a lot of NASCAR, a fair bit of F1 now, and probably got back into the NRL a bit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Favourite tyre compound?
Oh, I'd like to just have the softest one possible and everyone else be on the hardest one possible.
You race on Dunlops?
That'd help.
My favourite tyre ever is the Michelin Wet. I raced on it in GT in Malaysia in like a typhoon, and it was like, I thought I was out there in slicks. So that is like the world's coolest tyre. It was amazing. Right.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's unreal. What do you love most about the team?
Oh, God, that's definitely not saying you. It's a hard one. I just think that everyone gets along so well in there. So that's a big part of it. Like, it's, you know, it is sort of like a little family, and or not yeah. little, it's quite big, but yeah, probably everyone just gets along so well.
Yeah, the people. I mean, fast race cars, but the people are the... you want to be surrounded by good people.
Yep.
And then what round would you add to the calendar?
Oh, that's a tough one. What round would you... Oh, I reckon something through the streets of Sydney or something like that. Like something big would be cool. You know, like Melbourne's obviously cool, but it's yeah. mainly for the F1, but I'm not sure yet.
I want a doubleheader in NZ.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Just dragging all the NZ fans yeah. over this way. You know,
I think
you're
it's,
smarter.
It's, no, it makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah. Like, you know,
there's NZ. A lot of, you know, I'd love to do another four rounds if we could. Yeah. But I 100%. Think NZ doubleheader.
NZ doubleheader, yeah. 16 cool. rounds a year, pump it up a bit. That'd be cool.
Well, boys, this has been an absolute pleasure. I'm stoked we got to do this. Well, welcome aboard, mate. And we'll do this three other times before the year's out.
Sounds good.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.